Well, everybody, we just had professional golfer Daniel Summerhays on, and Dustin, that was an awesome interview. It just went a bunch of different places, but what was your favorite part?
Well, my favorite part wasn't what I thought would be, and my favorite part was our discussion on being intentional on how we rest. We've danced around that, not on purpose, but in past subjects when we've talked about, or past episodes when we've talked about win the hour. We refer to going 16-0, but we don't really talk about the other 8 hours of the day. We're referring to the hours that you're awake, and assuming when we make that comment, it's in our book, it's everything, 16-0, right? It's right next to that principle, the first principle of our program, win the hour. Assuming that 8 hours is happening, when the truth is it's probably not. And we need to give more attention to that. We can't go 16-0 if we're not getting 8 hours of sleep. And trying to go 18 or 19-0, isn't going to be good. It's not possible if we're not resting. Our bodies and brains, physically and mentally, just can't accomplish it. So, there's something we need to dive into probably a little bit more there. But hearing that from a professional athlete who's made it so much a point of, he said it's like the primary thing that he feels has helped him continue to play at the level he's playing at, is that intentional and effort to make sure that he rests properly and sleeps properly. And there's a lot to that we probably need to dive into more. So there was a lot in there, but that was probably my favorite.
Yeah, and I love that. We did dive into that a little bit. I also love, we talked about the downward spiral and how to get out of that when you have a bad play, a bad shot, or something like that. He gave some really great advice from both people he's drawn on for inspiration for that, and also from his own experience. So it's a great, great podcast. We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to the Sportlight Podcast for parents, coaches, and athletes. The Sportlight refers to the time in an athlete's life when they have increased ability to affect the culture around them and the increased opportunity to learn life's lessons through sports. This podcast aims to help parents and coaches capitalize on their athletes' precious time in the Sportlight. The Sportlight Podcast is brought to you by Especially for Athletes program.
Well, Daniel, we appreciate you hopping back on and joining us again.
No, it's great. Great to be on. I feel really lucky to be on more than once with you guys. So hopefully there's a few new things that I can share that will be helpful.
For those that maybe didn't hear our first episode, go back in the vault there and you can find it. I'm not sure what number it was, but it was probably, what do you think, 4 or 5 months ago? Probably in the fall. Anyway, we had a great episode with Daniel back then. So, Danny is a professional golfer, one of the best golfers to ever come out of the state of Utah, from a very popular and successful golfing family. And so anytime we can have a current pro athlete at any sport on, I particularly like golfers, Danny, because I think of all of the sports, I like to golf, as a hobby casually, but it's one of the sports I respect the most because there's nobody to blame. It's you against you, and it's you against the course. And I love that. I love that part of the game. The mental toughness that goes into golf to me might be second to none. And so, we're going to ask you some questions on that. But before we do that, I just wanted you to kind of catch us up on right now. You're playing on what's called the Korn Ferry Tour, which would be like, a good example of that might be like what, AAA baseball? Like you're just one step below the PGA Tour, which you have been on and done well at the PGA Tour in the past. But maybe you could even fill in the non-golfers that are listening, how that kind of works. You were on the PGA Tour, and then you're not on the PGA Tour. You went to retirement for a couple years, taught some golf and taught some school, actually, at your alma mater at Davis High School, and then kind of had this sort of change of attitude towards golf. And I remember when you first told me about that, how you approached golf differently and got back into it. Now you're back in trying to earn a way back to the PGA Tour, to the big, big leagues, but you're doing well at the Korn Ferry Tour. And currently you have a 6 week break or whatever. We're curious to know what that looks like for a pro golfer. What do they do in their breaks? But anyway, so several questions in there. Why don't you catch us up?
Yeah. So, you know, for the non-golfers, I spent 8 years on the PGA Tour, which if you're in soccer, that's the Premier League. If you're in football, that's the NFL. If you're in basketball, it's the NBA. If you're a tennis player, that's, you know, the ATP. So I'm fortunate to do that. Right now I'm playing on the Corn Ferry Tour, which would be AAA baseball. It literally, the guys who are, in fact, just this last 2 weeks on tour, the guy who won, he played the Corn Ferry Tour last year, you know, so you'll see several guys from the Corn Ferry Tour move up to the PGA Tour the following year, win, sometimes multiple times. They're competing in the majors. So it's I always consider it the second best tour in the world. So it's not, you know, they kind of brand the Corn Ferry Tour as this developmental tour. And I would disagree with whoever's running the marketing and everything for the Corn Ferry Tour, because it's not a developmental tour. These guys are not being developed. They are already there. They are already PGA Tour winning ready. And the results just show that. I mean, I think this year already two or three guys have won as rookies on the PGA Tour, you know. So it's no slouch of competition. You know, it'd basically be like going from, you know, I've been looking into soccer a lot the last little bit, and it'd be like, you know, you get from the Premier League, maybe you go play Bundesliga in Germany, which is still like the second best league in the world, you know. So that's where I'm at right now. The end of my BYU coaching season 2 years ago, I just started feeling this little bit of itch, like, wow, if I could feel healthy, my brain is so much in a better spot to go out and compete and to be patient and to work and to just go about it a different way, in a more joyful and grateful way. And so the last year and a half, that's kind of been my journey. I ended up finishing 81st. I think it's almost honestly been a year since I was last on with you guys on the podcast. You know, I finished 81st on the points list. Top 75 gets you to the Corn Ferry Tour Championship. You retain your full status for the next season. So I was actually really close to doing that. But I was a little disappointed. That week after, I missed the Tour Championship. Definitely some of that, like, little bit of, man, I came so close. I was really proud of how much I progressed throughout the year after not playing for 2.5 years really competitively. And but I was able to kind of bounce back. I remember I was sitting in a cold plunge, and your mind starts feeling different things when you're in the ice bath. You're trying to stay. And I was listening to a song. It was called "Wish You Pain." It's a kind of a deep song. It's by my favorite musician, Andy Grammer. But it's like, man, I hope that you fail. I hope that you experience pain. I hope that you go through struggles and that nobody's there to back you up sometimes, so that you can learn to grow. And I was like, you know what? This pain, this stings a little bit. But I was able to kind of, I came out of that the next couple of days. I said, you know what? This is actually going to be an amazing thing, because I'm not going to have a break right now. I'm going to have to go back to second stage of the qualifying tournament, and I'm going to have to play other tournaments to get ready for that. And then I'm going to have final stage of the qualifying tournament, which ended in December. And I got through all those stages, played really nicely. And 2.5 weeks later, I was already starting my new season again. So I never really had a time off, but I came out more prepared and ready than I ever had to start a season. And sure enough, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, I finished fourth at an event in the Bahamas. And now I've kind of put myself in a really nice place to potentially get my PGA Tour card back for next year. So it was kind of one of those things where you turn a little bit of heartache and sadness into you use the heartache and the pain, and you accept it and you change it and you go about doing your work. So that's where I'm at right now. I've now got, you know, 6-7 weeks off. I ended up not playing two tournaments because I felt a little bit, because I didn't have much of a break, I felt a little bit of the burnout coming in. I was getting ready, warming up for my third round at a tournament, you know, last month, and I was like, wow, this doesn't feel as exciting as it should. You know, I'm right in the thick of this tournament, and man, it kind of sounds fun to be home playing pickleball, or, you know, going to the course with my kids, or what, you know. So I was like, oh, that's a warning sign for sure. Because when we don't want to be a certain place, you got to listen to that. And I've learned over my career that, oh, that's time to reel it back in a little bit. So the tour last week was in Argentina, and this week is in Chile in South America. So I said, you know what? That's going to be a nice stretch to take off. And I made the right decision. I've been able to take the last 3.5 weeks now and really kind of sharpen the saw, is what Stephen Covey in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he would say, you sharpen the saw before you go cut the wood. So, you know, in answer to your question, what have I been doing in my time off? You know, I'm going to have 6.5 weeks total before my next event. I've started doing some speed training. Clubhead speed in golf is a massive thing. You got to be strong and fast. And so I have this system that I work with that I'm back increasing my speed. I do it every other day. I spend about an hour working on speed training. I've been doing a lot of yoga, stretching, core work, trying to get my back healthy again. I'll probably spend, between that speed training and just physical, you know, preparation, I'll probably spend 2 hours a day, you know, working on that. Between, I do a lot of stretching, a lot of yoga, a lot of core work, a lot of glute, lower back, kind of things like that. I've got a couple of disc herniations that I've been dealing with for the most of my career, honestly, but, yeah, so do that. And then in the cold winter months, I'll go down to my basement. I've got a putting green down in my basement, and I've got a net in my garage that I hit, and I get TrackMan out, which is kind of your launch monitor, ball and club data, and check those kind of things. So it's been honestly amazing. I'm doing my cold plunges, getting good sleep, you know, staying on a good sleep schedule. About 10:30, 11 o'clock hits, and it's time to get my seven to eight hours of sleep. So those are the kind of things. Not that I've like just removed myself from golf in this break, because I think some people think, oh, I need a break. And it's like, yes, but my break isn't not touch a club for 6 weeks, because I actually still love the process of training, love the work that you put in. But it's just time away from the travel, time away from having to prepare mentally for a tournament round every day, going through your yardage books and marking down hole locations, and just the scheming, planning, which you do enjoy when you've had a little bit of break from that. But this has been fantastic, because just been able to write down some goals, physical goals, mental goals, you know, doing some good meditation stuff, getting my, you know, doing some writing to kind of feel out your feelings or your fears and your dreams and aspirations. So, and then spending time with my family has been a big part of my, my time off too. I've got an almost 16-year-old first team All-State golfer that I want to spend a lot of time with, another son who loves soccer and basketball, and daughter loves dance. And so it's just been fun. You know, I sit at the door at about, I get all my work done by about 3 o'clock, and I sit at the door and wait to, for them to get home from school. And okay, guys, what are we doing today? What are we, you know, what are we going to, what can dad help you with? What can we go train, or what can we go do to, you know, maximize our afternoon and win those afternoon hours?
There you go. There you go.
That's awesome. I actually want to ask a question that maybe wasn't the direction we were going here, but I think this is a great question. When you talk about burnout, there's been a lot of concern recently with parents kind of pushing young people to play the same sport year round, you know, to, and get them in every league possible, and even playing so many games that they never have time to train. Mm. And so as I was listening to you describe what taking a break does for you, I'm wondering if you have any advice to parents about that who may be pushing kids to burnout.
You know, that's an amazing question, an incredibly important topic. First off, as far as the games versus trainings, I read somewhere, I can't remember where I read this literature, but in England and in Europe, they practice almost 4 times as much as they play games. And I thought that was really interesting, because in the States, it seems like you have 1 or 2 practices a week, and then you have 2 games, you know, it's almost 50-50. And I thought that was really interesting, you know, how much they train more than the actual game time over in Europe in soccer. And I think that the amount of game, a game takes so much more mental energy than a practice. There are some trainings, you know, practices that are difficult, but more physically difficult than maybe mentally difficult. If that, it makes sense to me, because the playing a tournament round for me is not physically difficult. You know, standing on the range and hitting balls for 4 hours, or standing on the putting green for 3 hours and working on your short game, like, that's physically demanding, but it's not necessarily mentally as demanding as a tournament round, you know? So I think there's probably something to that as far as youth sports go, the amount of games. You know, my son, he'll have a practice a week and then he's playing 2 games, you know, and that's just at a lower, you know, a lower level of soccer and basketball, you know. But then you get 4 or 5 games, you know, a week in different kinds of leagues. You're always playing your league play, and then you're playing an invitational, and then a tournament on top of it. It's just mentally exhausting. And that's what I said, like, I'm not stepping away from golf in my time off, because I still love the training part. It's me being able to train, which is super enjoyable. Game times are really fun, but in the higher levels, they're more stressful for sure. So I think that's a big thing, is how much, what's the balance of training versus game time? Because it is a whole different ball game when game time hits. And I purposely, you know, I'm trying to help my oldest son, who's a good golfer, manage how much he plays, you know. And we've written out his golf schedule, because there's 3 or 4 different junior golf tours in the state of Utah. There's national tournaments you can sign up for. There's men's amateur tournaments. There's even pro, like, I just signed up my son for the U.S. Open qualifying, you know, which is, it's the biggest golf tournament in the world. But for that, like, then you add that, but then you need to take away some other tournament or qualifying. So there's definitely a balance there. And then I would definitely add to that, I think sleep is just a massive part of managing burnout and exhaustion. I feel I feel for high school and college kids because so much is demanded of them. There's so a little emotional about it because I love that age group so much. And I know what I went through in high school and college, and I definitely didn't sleep enough. I remember never having like REM sleep, like when you're in a dream state, like that's your restorative sleep. And I remember through college, like I would go to bed and I literally felt like 30 seconds had gone by and my alarm was going off again, you know, and my brain wasn't like getting the reset and the restorative sleep that it needed to avoid burnout. You know, and even later on in my professional career, sleep was just a massive part. I'd have such a hard time falling asleep because my brain was going so much. And so that's been a big part of my focus. And man, anything we can talk about sleep for kids, you know, and to restore that, I think that helps their, it's actually, sleep can be almost like therapy. It's your body's natural way to process the emotions and the events of the day. And I see it being a maybe the number one factor in burnout. Like, we got to get our sleep. These high school kids, I mean, they got to be getting their 8-9 hours of sleep, which may mean saying no to a late hangout with some friends on a weekend. It may mean saying no to one extra club at school that you might be participating in. It might be saying no so that you can say yes to those really important things in your life and not just get dragged into the ground and burn out.
We should probably do, maybe we could have you back on for this, since it's obviously something you've studied and being a pro athlete understand. But Shad, we should probably do a podcast episode at some point on the value of sleep and recovery. You know, I've read some things as well over the past but I haven't really, you know, taken a deep dive into the subject. I know that I remember being caught off guard by the number when I read it. It was high enough that I was like, whoa, I don't know if I believe that. But the number, so I'm not going to quote exactly what it was because I don't recall it, but it was a lot higher than I thought. But it was the anticipated amounts of injuries that could be prevented if we had more sleep. Yeah. You know, if our body had time to repair, and the result being that the lack of time to repair, how many injuries, you know, doctors have said could have been avoided if you were sleeping more.
Well, you know, Dustin, it also, there's this association as well with screen time and how recent screen time was before kids try to fall asleep and the impact that it has. And so when you couple kids being busier with kids having the easy time fill of their phones, and then their phones affecting their brain's ability to shut down and go to sleep if they're using it right up to the moment of when they're trying to go to sleep, all of that seems to be adding to kids getting, in general, less sleep. And some mental health professionals have mentioned, even on our podcast, that lack of sleep could partly be to blame for some of the spikes in mental health concerns that we've seen. And so both the restorative effects of sleep and the effect it has on both the body and the mind, it is a subject that's really, really important. So we're grateful you bring it up, Daniel, because that's a big thing in our day.
Yeah, and just to continue on for another minute on that, if you look at what all these athletes, they are more concerned about sleep and recovery than they ever have been, because they are realizing the scientific data that goes behind recovery and sleep and their performance. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at like the massive company that Whoop. Have you guys heard of Whoop, the bands that people are wearing? It's all their biometric data that is being collected. It's heart rate, body temperature, respiration, oxygen, everything's going into what they use is called strain during a day. And the higher the strain you have or the harder you train, the more recovery you need. So that's basically their whole platform is how much recovery or sleep do you need to be restored so you're ready to perform. And I would say athletes at the highest level, that's one of their, that might be their top priority, is how hard can I train during the day and how well can I rest at night? So, and then on what you were saying, Shad, about the mental health side of phone use and light, the blue light, I actually taught this in high school. It was one of our, we spent like 2 days on this. Arianna Huffington, she's on like this crusade to basically ban phones from bedrooms, but go get your alarm clock. Like, cause we use our phone as our alarm clock all the time. She's like, your phone shouldn't even be in your bedroom with you. You know, it shouldn't even be looked at an hour and a half before bedtime because of the things that it does psychologically that affect sleep. You know, so anyway, it's just, there's so much good evidence and support for sleep, avoiding not just burnout, but like you said, anxiety and depression, all the things that E4A is working toward to help with mental health. And I mean, I just think it's such an important issue that somebody much more experienced and knowledgeable about sleep, I'm sure you guys can find to have on, that would really lay out the facts and the consequences, and then a way forward as well. Okay, what's your game plan? What's your game plan to make sure you're getting enough sleep? So I think it's definitely a thing to look at. My son, he played on a national, they actually won the national 13 and under PGA Junior League 3 years ago. And one of the dads of the sons had just played like a little charity tournament with Stephen Curry, and they became friends. And Steph, he's like my favorite athlete, but he FaceTimed in for the team the night before. And like, Steph, what do you got for us? What advice? He said, number one, get to bed. And all the dads looked at him and were like, yeah, guys, like, Stephen Curry's telling you, get sleep. Like, that's the number one thing, more than mentally prepping for, you know, visualizing and doing this, like, get to bed, get a good night's rest. Yeah. You know, anyway, and enough about that. But as far as burnout goes, I wasn't sleeping back in 2016-17. That's when I experienced like my most major burnout, where golf was not fun at all. Things just weren't, I wasn't able to improve how I wanted. I was super anxious, super, you know, it was debilitating. And that's when I knew that some things needed to change, and it started with sleep.
I know NBA basketball players on game days take naps in the middle of the day. That's part of the regimen after their morning kind of shoot around and meetings and therapy and things they'll do is they go back to the hotel and they take a nap. And I do remember listening to a podcast on sleep years ago, and the person talking about, to your point about not having phones in the bedroom, they were actually talking about, because your phones trick your brain into thinking it's still daytime, right? The light. And so the brain doesn't make that connection that it's nighttime and it's time to go to sleep. So, but they even brought up that we as adults shouldn't have our TVs in our room, that our bedroom should be specifically for sleeping. Like, that's, so when we go in there, our brain knows it's time to go to bed rather than it's time to sit down and, you know, the TV, there's a TV room, But it's the bedroom is this the restroom, right? It's not the restroom. It's the room to rest in. It's the room to get rest and get relaxation. And there probably is more to that. We need to dig into that a little bit. We talk all the time about, you know, the dangers of social media for all the other reasons, but I haven't heard it talk much about the as it relates to sleep. I haven't heard, maybe I've missed that, but I would think in all of the research I've done over the years on it, I would have found more on that element to it, which I haven't. It's all the comparison. It's the, yeah, you know, it's the fake life, the addiction to it, the, you know, wasting time, all the other things that you find that from it, but the sleep element to it is probably real. And it's probably why, my guess is, when you're playing, you already answered this question, because you said, you said this to us off air, but you said that you use Instagram, and I sort of do the same thing with this. It's more of it's for research, right? Like you follow things to where you can learn. That's all you're really following. My guess is when you're in the middle of a tournament, to correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd be interested in this. What does your screen time use look like when you're in the middle of a weekend, 4-day golf tournament? And what does your sleep look like? You get done, depending on your tee time and when you finished up your round, what is your post 18-hole Thursday tournament? You got to play again Friday. What happens during that time to get you ready to go back out on Friday and play again?
Yeah, so a couple things. I'll tidy up my my sleep beef right real quick. I will say all those things that you were talking about comparison and the, you know, social media, those things, they're still going to always be there. It's going to be really hard to avoid it completely. But when we are in a restful state, when our brain is recovered, when our body's recovered, we're able to weed through and see things more clearly, if that makes sense, right? Where you read something or you hear something, you're like, well, that's probably just not true. Instead of reacting, if we're in a burnout, tired state, we become very reactionary instead of being able to absorb whatever we, you know, read or listened to or watched, and you're able to think about it more clearly. And as far as like my, you guys would probably, you're probably going to laugh at me. If I took you through everything that I do to get a good night's sleep, it starts first thing in the morning. And there's a neuroscientist at Stanford. He actually has an incredible podcast called The Huberman Lab. Andrew Huberman is his name. And he's an ophthalmologist and neurologist at Stanford. And he says the number one thing you can do to get a good night's sleep is actually to view low-level sunlight early in the morning. Like, not look straight into the sun, but to have it on your eyes. And I remember sending a little video last summer about, hey, athletes, get up, get your morning sunlight. And that's, so what happens is we have neurons in our eyes that actually trigger the brain, and we're on these cycles. Our bodies are pretty incredible, things that we don't even know about. But when we get that sunlight on our eyes, it triggers about 14 hours after that the release of melatonin into our brains. And so you can get that early morning sunlight. And he says that's the number one most important thing you can do to get a good night's sleep. So it's actually really fascinating. The other thing that I started doing was when your body temperature actually has to decrease for you to fall asleep. And the longer it would take you to increase your body temperature throughout the day, the longer it would take you to fall asleep for it to cool down. So that's actually why I started doing kind of these ice bath and cold plunges early in the morning, was the net result is actually a spike in body temperature. You'd think it'd be the opposite, that it'd cool your body down. But the net result is your body says, hey, you just you just froze me. I need to generate heat. So your body actually, the net result of an ice bath is that it increases your body temperature. So I do that. I wake up, I'm within the first hour or so that I'm awake, I try and view that morning sunlight and get that early morning cold exposure. And then the opposite is happening at night. I take a warm bath and I light the candle. You know, I turn off all the overhead lights because overhead lights can kind of simulate the sun being out still. Try and avoid, like you said, TV. I don't have a TV in my bedroom. It's like it is the rest room. It is where you go to restore. You know, I have a candle right by my bedside, and that's kind of like old school. Like I've got my candlelight, lantern light, and from a guy who used to really be a crappy sleeper, I fall asleep pretty darn fast now, and I wake up feeling a lot more refreshed. Anyway, so that's kind of my routine for that. And then what I had that thought, and then remind me, Dustin.
When you're in the middle of a tournament, you're playing with the best golfers in the world, how do you prepare yourself between rounds? Because it's used typically if you make the cut in golf, you play Thursday, Friday. If you score a certain score, you can, which is about half the field or so, right, will continue to play Saturday, Sunday. So if you make the cut, you continue on. What do you do in between those rounds to be ready to go?
Yeah, so I think there's an interesting kind of reset button on the PGA Tour and in professional golf after you make a cut. Some guys are just trying to hang on for the rest of the week, and other guys say, oh, okay, it's go time, let's go. And that's the better mindset. And so usually on a Friday afternoon after I've made the cut, I'll actually get a nice little practice session in, because I'm like, hey, let's prep for, you know, I'll redo some of my putting drills. I'll do a couple mechanical things in my swing that I've been working on. Because usually Tuesday or Wednesday before the tournament starts, you're doing those same things, and it's nice to have another refresher Friday after you make the cut. Pro golf's very interesting because sometimes it's hard to get in a routine because you always have one early morning tee time and one afternoon tee time. So you either play early Thursday morning and late Friday afternoon, or late Thursday afternoon and early Friday morning. So you kind of plan. Every week's a little different, and you have to plan out how you're gonna. You know, if I'm a late early, then I need to make sure that, you know, Thursday morning, even before I start the tournament, or Wednesday evening, that I've got enough golf balls marked up, that I've got enough, you know, my hole location sheets. I've got all the dots written in my yardage book. I've gone through, you know, in my mind what I'll get on the weather.com app, and I'll check wind direction. I'll go through the holes the night before, because for that other next round, it's a really tight turnaround. I might finish at 7 p.m. and I've got to be up at 4:30 the next morning. So there's not a lot of time to prepare. So the more that you can do beforehand, you know, in that tight turnaround, the better. But sometimes, you know, if I'm having to get to bed early, I won't eat a big meal beforehand. Like, you're planning out your meals, you're doing all this planning just so that you know you're ready to go early the next morning. So sometimes if I play late, I might just have a bar and make sure I drink water with electrolytes the night before. I usually lose, you know, 4 or 5 pound during a tournament week because you don't really have the time to sit down and eat a nice meal or a good meal, and you want your body to just be ready, firing on all cylinders. So I try and do a lot of planning and preparation so that I can, you know, if you finish a competitive round at 7 p.m. and you know you need to be in bed by at least 9:30 or 10 because you're getting up at 4:30, like, you start to shrink your window. So the sooner you can get your body, you know, first thing when I get home, I'm taking that hot shower, or I'm having a good stretch, and I'm starting to calm my mind down, do a quick little yoga session or a little meditation to try and wind things down. Because the sooner you can wind things down, that means the better you're going to wake up the next morning ready to go.
Chad, I know you have a question you want to fire at Danny, but he's mentioned several things that I'm guessing, Chad, you've probably had this cross your mind as well, because we bring this up a lot when you and I talk. When I keep hearing, Danny, and is it your professional approach to your career as a pro athlete? This is obviously your livelihood. The word that keeps jumping out to me is how intentional you are in your preparation, how intentional you are in what you do every day, from how you prepare to go to sleep that night when you wake up that morning, right? The getting that light in your eyes. You know, that's what we refer to as intentional training. When we say win the hour and be intentional and embrace the boredom of consistency and all these things that we throw around at in E4A, that's what you do. And it's what you have to do to be an elite level athlete. So for the parents who are listening, or if we have any kids listening, you know, I think part of that is we need to be intentional in letting our kids be kids too. That's important. And we've talked about that. There needs to be a break, and that's okay. But if they're really serious about becoming great at something like sleep, or something like, you know, how they're fueling their body, or meditation, or, you know, ice baths and water intake and all these other things are just as important, if not more important, than how many times we're taking them to the gym to go and lift weights, you know, or to the games to go play all weekend, because they will. They'll play 5-6 games in a weekend, and we'll spend hours and hours of travel time and money and everything to go play those, but we'll spend zero time talking about the importance of water intake or sleeping or training our brains to recover and all these things that you're talking about, then wonder why we maybe never maximize performance. So, you know, I think that's something for all of us to think of, not just as an athlete. Everything you're saying is just for human performance, whether that's in business or in, you know, in any area of life. We want to be at our best, right? And I'm reminded of a quote that I actually posted it the other day, I think on our Instagram at Especially for Athletes, that when we're tired, we're attacked by ideas we conquered years ago. Right, that we let other things come back that we beat, that we conquered years ago. But a tired mind and a tired body sometimes gives in to things we conquered a long time ago. So there's a lot of value and a lot of depth in what you've said here the last, you know, 20 minutes. But maybe we shift gears a little bit, Chad. I know you had a question that we had talked about a little bit earlier that you wanted to throw out at Danny that I think is important.
Yeah, maybe a concluding comment to what you both have shared. I studied a book a while back about outliers, and I forget the exact name of it. Maybe that was the name of it.
Yeah, the outliers, yeah.
Yeah.
Gladwell.
Gladwell, yeah.
Yeah. And the kids in Brazil, in this practice versus playing games, I think of golf, for example, or tennis or whatever. The amount of times you'll go to the range and you might hit 100 golf balls in, you know, just a half an hour or whatever, versus you play a round and you're not going to hit that many in the round. Most of your time is going to be spent walking. And they found in Brazil, when Brazil just popped onto the map, all of a sudden is this world power in soccer. It's because they had invented this game called futsal, where it had to be played because there was more urban environments where the kids were playing. And they watched some futsal games where they played with a smaller ball and a smaller court, and the kids were touching the ball like 5-10 times as much as they would on a huge soccer field. And that's why they were developing so many more ball handling skills than the rest of the world, was the invention of that little game out of necessity because they didn't have a lot of room. And it just made me think, like, in what we do, being intentional. We talked about the sleep part of being intentional and all that, but just intentional about using time to do those things that get a lot of touches, get a lot of practice and repetition as well. So anyway, that was my thought to conclude, but yeah. I really would love to ask you, Danny, we like to talk about the mental side of the game. And as Dustin's already alluded to, golf, you're just standing there over a ball, you know, and it's you and the ball. And I personally have experienced the spiral that can happen to a golf game, you know, where one shot affects the next six shots, and you just kind of playing a great game of golf and then hit one off to the right, and it just destroys the rest of the game. And I've seen it happen in tennis. I've seen basketball players that have a great first half and just melt down. And I'm just wondering what you've learned as a golfer in such a mentally intensive game about preventing that spiral in sport where one bad play just sends you down the drain.
So that's an incredibly deep question for sure. And it's one very worthy of discussing extensively. I would, a few thoughts on that. My first impression that I want to share, and I don't know if I shared this before, but in golf, I think there's a couple different types of players, and I think there's not honestly one solution for everybody. I think everybody needs to find what works for them to bring them back into focus. And it's not the same answer for everybody, and it's not the same answer at different times in your life either. I remember being very, you know, you get trained in golf to be like the horse that has the blinders on, you know, and because we just see like Tiger Woods and he's just laser focused. He'll say, like, you know, people say he wouldn't even talk to his playing partner. He wouldn't talk. I mean, he basically, even I've heard some interviews saying like he would black out. Like, he's like, I don't even remember. He's like, I remember the result, but I don't even remember swinging the club, you know? So I think I grew up with this, like, oh, just have the blinders on. Don't let anything distract you. You're only looking at your intended target. You know, there's no lake over there. There's no, you know, there's no out of bounds. There's no trees. There's no bunker there. Like, you're just looking at your target, which I think there is value in some of that ideology. And I think it, at times that has worked for me. For me, one of the biggest lessons that I feel have put me more at ease and drawn me into more focus is actually expanding my vision. And if we could say that eyes up and eyes around, for me, helped me zero in on what I was trying to do. And an example is this: the first tee box at any tour event, I haven't played a tournament my entire life, my entire career, where I haven't been, you know, had that adrenaline, those nerves on the first tee box. It's never happened. I am still waiting for the day where I step up on the first tee and I'm just like, yeah, I got this. This is going to be pretty easy. You know, I'm not really feeling anything right now. I'm just going to stripe this right down the middle of the fairway. You know? it hasn't happened. Right. But there were times, you know, it's kind of cool because different events, most events have a nice grandstand with, you know, hundreds of people on that first tee box. And I started worrying, like, oh man, what are they, if I hit a bad shot off this first tee, like, what are they gonna think? Or man, I don't want to do this. And anyway, I had kind of an epiphany. I said, you know what? They're literally just here to have a good time. They are taking a break from their job. They're here with their buddies. They're not even going to remember your first shot, you know? And so I, with that in mind, I said, you know what? Okay, well, let's help them have a good time here. And so every time that I would get on the first tee box, I would intentionally scan the grandstand. I would look up into the grandstand, the crowd, and find someone to like lock eyes with and give them a thumbs up to kind of give them a smile. And then as I looked out and I expanded my vision, I was able to really zero in now, because the feeling was they weren't judging me anymore. They were here as a friend, and they were here to be entertained and have a good time. And that allowed me to go. So I went out so that I could narrow my focus and not worry about like the result. It was like, okay, now I can focus. Oh, okay. My swing thought, all right, left hand, you know, back of the left hand down to the ball at impact. It's like, oh, okay, stripe show, you know, first tee box. And it kind of settled the nerves. It changed it from that fearful adrenaline to that excited adrenaline where you can really harness it. So that's one thought is, you know, expand your vision and eyes up so that you can focus in. and that I kind of like that rings true to me. Eyes up, eyes out, so you can focus in on what you're trying to do.
Really cool.
And then the next part that I've learned a lot from just different athletes and different business leaders, different religious leaders, different spirit, you know, again, my Instagram feeds. Yeah, it'd be fun to share. I follow like 16 things. That's it, right? I follow 16 things, but they're things that like help me, right? And one of these was a video of Novak Djokovic, and he talked about, you know, the interviewer said, hey, you know, your superpower is your ability to focus. And Novak's like, no, it's actually, I'm going to correct you. It's not a superpower. It's something that I've trained. I've trained the mental side of this. And he was very open and very honest. And I think it's phenomenal how vulnerable he actually is, because he's arguably the greatest tennis player to ever walk the planet. And he says before every match, even during matches, he says, there's a storm inside. there's that one bad shot, Shad, that's going to spiral the rest of your round down the tube. Right. And Novak feels that. And he says, like, there's a storm inside. I have doubts. It could be the first round of a tournament. It could be against a non-seeded player. And he still feels this doubt, this storm. And what he said, that, but I've trained. I know that that's coming, and I've trained. I've trained conscious breathing techniques, right? Breathing can actually really, there's what's called like a physiological sigh that actually can bring you back, your heart rate back down, and restore some mental clarity. It's like you take a deep breath, like, and then you take that second, like, extra inhale, and then you out through your mouth really slow, and you do that like twice, and like the science, like, oh, this conscious breathing technique literally can bring you back from the spiral. Mm-hmm. Right? So he works on that, and then he says, you know what, I have visions during a match of me shanking a tennis ball off the rim of my racket. I have visions of hitting, you know, double faulting. He says, and I don't try and avoid it or just say, oh, no, don't think that. Don't think, because then he gives it more energy. But he says he accepts that that thought happened. And then he's really quick to now focus back on what he would like to have happen. You know, so I think he's a great example to me of how to not shy away from the storm, but learn how to manage the storm and just know that discomfort's going to be there no matter what. I've heard a golfer say, it's not that you'll ever be comfortable out on the golf course, but you will become less uncomfortable. Become less uncomfortable. Kobe Bryant's another one that I continue. You know, I was actually kind of a Kobe hater growing up because it was just the Jazz. Like, I'm a Jazz fan. I love the Utah Jazz, right? And Kobe was just like, okay, you're going to win another championship, you know, whatever. And, like, I just didn't love Kobe very much, but I've gotten do you echo that?
Oh yeah, I'm with you. I couldn't stand him, and now I can't. I listen to him every day.
Like, it's unbelievable some of the things that he says, and just the truths, honestly, that he's applied in his life. And he talks about how our emotions, when they get out of control, it's just us letting our imagination and our projection of the future run wild. And that's what creates the fear and the over, you know, the reactionary emotions versus being able to stay centered and stay still. I read a quote that said, we give a lot of energy to playing out the worst case scenarios a lot of times. And it was like, to be fair to yourself and to your brain, why not play out the best case scenario as well? Mm-hmm. And then realize that there's 100 scenarios in between those two extremes that could happen. And we truly just don't know. So why give the energy to that? And I thought that was a great thought for play out the worst case scenario, play out the best case scenario, and realize that anything in between that can happen. And so then why worry about it? So we can stay right in the middle of those two extremes. So I think those are a couple thoughts that I've had that have really helped me out a lot, you know. Not trying to avoid the storm inside, like Novak says, and accept it, and then get back to what you're trying to do. Turn your focus outward to other people to make human connection. The more connected we are with other humans, the better we're able to do the task at hand. I truly believe that. And then, as Kobe said, like, play out these two scenarios and realize that neither of those are probably going to happen. It's probably going to be somewhere in the middle. So just focus on the middle and be in that moment and have that stillness and be excited to learn from whatever situation arises. And that's how I've felt I've been able to avoid the spiral out on the golf course and been able to bring my emotions back. Some of the breathing stuff has really helped as well. You know, that physiological side, bring your heart rate back down, get a little more mental clarity. Those are some of the tools that I've used.
That's really cool that someone taught me once. They were talking about meditation, but we often say the phrase, watch your thoughts. Like, you know, don't have any bad thoughts in your head, kind of a thing. But they said, think of watch your thoughts more of like you're in a lawn chair and you're watching cars go by.
Yeah.
And yeah. What you're talking about is not giving power to thoughts. Sometimes when we have a thought, oh, I'm going to double fault, for example, then, you know, we give power to that thought instead of just watching it like a car that comes in the screen and out of the screen, like you would watch cars go by and just, huh, you know, there's a thought, right?
Yeah.
But not give any any power to it.
That's that mindfulness. It's a non-judgmental view of thoughts, right? So that's exactly, keep talking more about that, because I'm a big believer in that kind of not giving power to your thoughts. Just observe them.
Yeah. Well, and it goes to addictions as well. You know, I've met with many people over the years that are trying to overcome an addiction of one way or another, you know, and oftentimes they have a thought, and they just don't want that thought to turn into an action that they're trying to overcome. And they give so much power to it instead of just thinking in their mind like, huh, yeah, that was, you know, just that for me, whatever reason, that image of sitting in a lawn chair and watching cars go by. Because sometimes even when we have thoughts about other people, about ourselves, about our game or whatever, when we internalize those thoughts and act like they're about us, then they become part of us. You know, they become our behavior versus just like, duh, I'm not going to give that thought any power, you know, and not feeling bad about having a thought, not feeling like, you know, labeling ourselves or labeling our game or letting it affect. Just be mindful of, yeah, that's a thought that entered my head. I'm not going to give power to it. Just let it go out. And I think it's healthy in many areas of our life to not give power to thoughts. Just let thoughts be thoughts and don't give power to it.
So I love it so much. And the same in those thoughts, that you could even take that, like, just events that happen in your life too. You know, sometimes we judge events so much, like I was saying, I missed the tour championship by just a few points last year. And oh my gosh, that's such a bad thing. So bad. How could I have not made it? Instead of like, yeah, that's what happened. I'm sitting in the lawn chair and I'm watching the events happen in my life. And then you say, oh, okay, yep, that happened. And now I get to unemotionally move on and view it how I want. And I know, Dustin, we've talked about too, kind of that similar image of the river that's running by, right? Yeah. And you've talked about that too, like, okay, there's a leaf that just went by. Oh, there's a little ripple of water there. Oh, I see a stone down in there too. Oh, the duck just, wow, that was an interesting duck. You know, like, you're able to stay in this present frame of mind, and it is that kind of next shot, you know, next playing clear, like you were saying, like, yeah, okay, this is happening, this thought is there, don't feel bad about it, don't feel great about it. You know, and
one play and clear, one shot and clear, one day and clear. We can't live backwards. So it happened, we acknowledged it, today was a bad day. Okay, clear my head. I can live backwards and relive yesterday today and make the same dumb mistakes and same misery, or I can try to make today better. But it happened. You know, when you first told us that example of the river, in our last episode with you, I told you how it really struck me, and I've thought a lot since about that. Used it a lot actually in my own life, but I took it maybe one step further and. You know, when we see the piece of trash come down that river, all the beautiful things that we're seeing and acknowledging, and here comes the water bottle, right, that somebody decided to throw in this, the beautiful river, and it ruins the moment because here's this piece of trash that's, well, it only, what we can't do is follow the trash all the way down the river, right? And don't walk with the trash all the way down the river and see where it ends up. Right. But we do that sometimes. We have something that comes into our life. It'd be the same example, Shad, of the car. Like, don't get on your car back running, hop in your car and follow that bad thought down the freeway and keep watching it and see where it goes. Like, we got to let it move on and get back to what could be next. Maybe the next thing coming down that river is a beautiful brown trout. Right. And I'm going to stay here and because that could come next, or it's going to be a really pretty, my favorite automobile is going to drive by. But I think too many times we see the trash and we just get fixated on it. And we, it maybe that's the spiral example that you were talking about, Shad, is we can't move on because we can't, man, how did that happen? How did your point to not making making the tour championship, we keep focusing on it instead of, listen, it happened. This is all easier said than done, but acknowledge it happened. It was sucky, but life sucks sometimes. So give yourself permission to have sucky moments. Give yourself permission to make mistakes. Give yourself permission to screw up, because we're going to. And when we do, say, dang it, all right, I did it. Okay, what's the lesson learned? Learn the lesson and then let it go and focus on the next car or the next moment in the river, because like a river like time, it's never the same, right? The water's never the same. And the 5 seconds from now, we don't get that back. You know, it's time's always changing. So, you know, there's in sports, whether, you know, in life, in relationship issues we're dealing with, the ability to acknowledge, learn, and move on, and then get back up and get fighting again is critical. It's the key.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I again, and Shad, man, I we're gonna probably gonna keep asking you to come on, Danny. Shad, would you agree?
Yeah, it's just always a deep conversation where I leave, but you know, I could tell when it's a beneficial podcast, because this is going to impact the rest of my day, you know, which is what we hope, right? Like as we have these conversations and think, we hope those who are listening to this, that they're like, yeah, this really helped me, and it's going to help me help my kids or help my team. And so when I feel that personally, I know, yeah, this is good stuff. I'm excited to share this with other people. And man, both episodes, Danny, it's been like things I can remember that I share with my kids and all these things for both. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys. I'm a big believer in everything you guys are doing, and the kind of the truth and kind of helping parents and kids wade through the kind of the confusing times, honestly, that we're living in. So I really appreciate you guys trusting me to be on with you guys, and because I share your passion and your vision for our young athletes and for the parents and families of athletes, and hopefully that trickled into, like we said, all the families around them. So thank you guys so much.
Well, and for those of you who wonder how we prep for these episodes, you know, I'm sure other podcasts, they have a prep meeting beforehand, and there's a script that's sent out on questions to be pondering and thinking about answering. That's not how we run our podcast episodes. Our pre-show prep was about 30 seconds. We all hopped on. Shad and I had one question. We said, hey, Danny, we want to kind of bring this up at some point. Mine was, I wanted to ask you about what your day was like during the, when you are resting during 6 weeks of prep, like, what does that look like? What do you do? I was curious what an athlete, pro athlete does when he takes a little bit of a break. And Shad wanted you to give some advice on athletes controlling that spiral when a bad thing happens. The rest of this was all just where we went. And we ended up talking about sleep, and we ended up talking about all these other things that we could probably do multiple podcast episodes on. But I think that's the beauty of when you get people together who have a common goal, which is we've all been athletes and successful at it. And, you know, I coach, Shad mentors, you know, thousands of people for what he does with work. You're a professional golfer. We need more people to get together and have conversations. They don't have to record them and have a podcast, but talk about the stuff at lunch. Like, have meaningful conversations on how we can address things and share ideas. One of my, I don't know where I heard this, guys, but I, and maybe I made it up. I honestly don't remember, but somebody said, what's the most valuable resource? What would be the worst thing to lose in our world? And everybody was sharing the ideas. And somebody said, or like I said, I read it or I made it up. I don't remember. but it was the sharing of ideas. That when we stop sharing ideas and we stop communicating our views on how things might be able to improve, and we just accept things the way they are, we stop progressing. We have to keep sharing our thoughts and our ideas and how we see something, because we all come with different, you know, with different lenses on from experiences in our life. And when we can get together and talk about them, you never know where the discussion is going to go or what message is going to be shared that's really going to help somebody. So I guess a challenge I might give to any adults that are listening to this, and kids, but especially to the adults, is that make time to have real conversations and to share your thoughts on things. Things maybe that you hear from a podcast or you're reading a book, share them with each other. Don't just leave it in your brain and in the book that you read. Talk to people. If it's valuable, share it on social media, so that if we are going to be on social media, then for hell's sakes, let's make it freaking positive for people, right? Yeah. Like, let's make it good for people. Let's share positive stuff so that if our kids are going to be on it, they're getting positive stuff, because we dang well know they're getting plenty of negative crap on there. So we've got to fight back with positive stuff. And we, as the adults of the kids, when we say they need to do better, or they need to do a better job with social media or teaching our kids, we are they. It's us. No one else is going to do it. We have to train and lead and be examples to our kids that we are raising, that are our neighbors, that are our friends' kids, the kids we coach, the kids in our churches or in our, you know, our communities. We have to be more engaged and more involved in their life. Otherwise, all of this is just nonsense. We're just talking in circles here. And so we have to be intentional in that if we're going to help our youth. And Danny, for you to take time out of what is a time for you to be with your family and to be preparing your body to get back at it. And you know, we're fans of you. I told you last time I talked to you that I'm sure Google is tracking me. The government that's tracking me wonders why I've got this all of a sudden bro crush on Danny Summerhays, because I'm constantly Googling his name, you know. But we're fans of you, man. And for you to give of your time, it's because you are passionate about this, and we know that about you. You're not just doing this because for any other reason. We're not paying you to hop on here. This is because you care about people. And Shad and I, you know, Shad, I'm sure you would be okay with me speaking for you on this. We appreciate the heck out of you. We know this is important to you, and you're doing a lot of good by sharing your stories and messages with people. And if we can help be a conduit to share some of those experiences and lessons that you've learned with other people, let us be it, man, because you got great stuff up in that brain and a heck of a golf swing.
Love it. I love being a part of it. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for listening to the Especially for Athletes Sportlight podcast. We hope you'll follow us on social media and continue to share, like our podcast, let people know about it. Keep your eyes up and do the work.
This has been the Sportlight podcast from Especially for Athletes, sponsored by Coca-Cola. You can learn more about Especially for Athletes by visiting the website at especiallyforathletes.org. You can also learn more about the book, The Sportlight, by Shad Martin and Dustin Smith at especiallyforathletes.org/book.